process on how to interpret online or in person.
Yes, good morning. This is Yvonne Morgan, Spanish interpreter. And this is an announcement to use the interpretation feature. Please scroll to the bottom of the Zoom screen where the meeting controls are. Click on the interpretation icon, the world, and select English as your language. If you are joining through the Zoom mobile app, cell phone, tablet, etc., please press the ellipsis, then interpretation, and then choose your language. Finally, click on mute audio, original audio, to not hear the original Spanish low in the background. Headsets are available for interpretation. If you are in the meeting room, please check out a headset from the receptionist in the lobby. Aviso por parte del intérprete. Para hacer uso del servicio de interpretación, favor de desplazarse a la parte inferior de la pantalla de Zoom, donde aparecen los controles. Haga clic en el icono de interpretación, que es el globo terráqueo, y seleccione Spanish, español. Si está utilizando la aplicación móvil de Zoom, celular, tableta, etc., presione los puntos suspensivos y luego interpretación y luego el idioma. Si no desea escuchar el audio original en inglés en el fondo, por favor seleccione Mute Original Audio si desea audio original. Contamos con auriculares disponibles para el servicio de interpretación. Si se encuentra en la sala de reunión, favor de pedir auriculares con la recepcionista en el vestíbulo. Gracias.
Thank you so much, and welcome to the September 12, 2024 Mobility Working Group meeting. I'm Councilmember Jose Rodriguez, and will be your chair for today. Before we begin, I would like to ask Tessa, who is serving as our clerk, to confirm if we have quorum.
Good morning, Chair. We have a quorum for this meeting.
Thank you. And just a reminder, before we begin our agenda, to review the process of which working group members as well as the members of the public would like to participate in our meeting. For working group members, anytime you would like to speak, you can simply raise your hand, make sure to call on you. For any individuals in the audience, please fill out a speaker slip. And for any individuals online, you can simply click on the raised hand button. Based on those factors for today's meeting, we will have the public be allowed to speak for 2 minutes for their public comments. So beginning the meeting on item number one, we have three staff announcements for today's meeting. Our first announcement will be from Richard Radcliffe on the RTIP. Our second announcement will be from Jenny Russo on a request for ATP grant volunteers. And the third update will be from Cecily Taylor on Regional Planning Network.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Mobility Working Group members. I'm here this morning to provide you with a brief update on the 2025 Regional Transportation Improvement Program, or RTIP. As a reminder, the RTIP is the five-year program of transportation projects that implement the first 5 years of Sandag's regional plan, and also includes the TransNet program of projects. We update the program every 2 years and amend it quarterly. And we started the 2025 update process in February and then released the draft 2025 RTIP on July 31st for a 30-day public comment period, which concluded on August 31st. We have a public hearing scheduled for the September 20th Transportation Committee meeting, and then the board will be asked to adopt the final 2025 RTIP on September 27th. The 2025 RTIP will be due to the state by September 30th, and at that time, the RTIP will be incorporated into the statewide program, and then the state will release the statewide program for public comment. And we are expecting to have the RTIP federally approved on or around December 16th. For TransNet funding that's programmed in the RTIP, the September 27th date is the key date, because at that point you will be able to draw down any funding that's programmed in fiscal years 2025 and 2026. And for federal funding, the federal approval date is the key date to be able to access those funds. Overall, there is nearly $6 billion programmed in the five-year period of the 2025 RTIP covering fiscal years 2025 through 2029, and about $22 billion programmed in all the RTIP years, which includes prior years. For TransNet LSI, there's about $571 million currently programmed for the There's 519 projects in the 2025 RTIP. 395 of those projects are being carried over from the current 2023 RTIP, and 124 projects are being marked as completed, deleted, or delayed. The last thing here is coming up soon in October, we'll be opening up the first amendment to the 2025 RTIP on around October 18th. And this amendment will be going to the board in January of 2025 for approval. I will be sending out a notification to those that I work with on programming around that October 18th date. And just keep in mind that for this RTIP cycle, we'll be shifting to a quarterly formal amendment cycle. So we won't be sending out administrative amendment notifications anymore, but we will still be able to process those on an as-needed basis. And that's all I have. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any committee member questions? Yes.
Thanks for that update. I just had a quick question. I wasn't clear on the October amendment. Can you explain that a little more? I'm not too familiar with that.
Sure. So we update the RTIP every 2 years to basically bring the next five-year period closer by 2 years. And then we amend it quarterly, which basically is an opportunity to make any funding updates, local jurisdictions to access more of their transit money. They'll need to make changes, move them around, you know, move the funds between projects or between phases, fiscal years.
Thank you. Any other additional questions? Comments? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Program or the ATP. This is a state and federally funded program that we oversee the competitive process. So our applications opened in July. They're actually due next Monday. So I'm out kind of trying to recruit volunteers that would be interested in reading and scoring the applications and helping us decide who can be recommended to the Transportation Committee and the Board of Directors for funding. We're looking for a broad array of folks that can score, so certainly folks from your jurisdiction, but it can also be stakeholders, members of the community. It's really broad of who we're looking for. Really the only qualifications is that they know, you know, have experience about bike projects, pedestrian projects, safe routes to school. We do see a lot of projects that are benefiting schools, and then projects that benefit disadvantaged communities. So as long as you have any sort of mixture of that sort of experience, that's who we're looking for. All the materials will be submitted electronically to the evaluators. They'll have through about middle of January to score, so I try to give as much time as possible. So far I have 16. I usually see a handful of more come in sort of towards the end of the time frame. So I'm looking at around maybe 20 or so. Applications, that could be surprising to get a few more. So in terms of time commitment, if you're wondering, you know, I'm interested in how much time does it take, it's usually about an hour to do each one. So we're looking at probably 20 hours or so of a time commitment. That's presuming you score all of them. I'm really flexible. If I get folks that want to contribute but can only do a couple, that's okay. I've done some shifts this cycle to allow for that. So if any of you are interested or you know anybody that's interested, feel free to reach out to me and let me know, and I'm happy to discuss anything you might have any questions about.
Thank you. Any questions? I have a quick question.
Sure.
In terms of the evaluations, you mentioned about 1 hour per application for the individuals. Is that done so collectively or individually, and then the volunteers would be able to provide feedback?
Sure. So each volunteer will score them on their own independently. We do have sort of a getting to know meeting, so we set up everybody, train you, kind of teach you how to read the material, where you go to look for content. You'll do your individual scores, and then we convene that committee back together, and we try to develop consensus around them. So it helps look for things if there's outliers, or if we just want to know, hey, I thought this, am I on the right track? Is there something that I missed? And so it helps kind of collaborate that information as well.
And you mentioned that you meet individuals that have some experience with bike projects or Safe Ride to Schools. Could that include residents that use the
platform on a regular basis? Yes, they could be residents or stakeholders, really anybody out there that knows it. We like to have a mixture so that we can find planners or engineers. Those are great from a project delivery standpoint, but it doesn't need to be. It can be residents as well.
Okay. Yes, Councilman.
So would that be morning or afternoon? And then how many hours a day? Just one per review?
It's up to you. Okay. So I basically give everybody the material to score, and then I check in with you periodically. So it's self-paced. We're not going to have like a meeting on specific days. We just have the two meetings, the training meeting in the beginning, and then that post evaluation meeting. Everything in between is really up to you, because I know most people are doing this in their free time. So it's up to you kind of how you want to gauge. Do you want to spend a couple hours a day, or do you want to wait and do them, you know, a chunk at a time, that sort of thing.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Any other additional questions or comments? Really want to thank for your continued efforts and SANDAG's continued effort to reach out and ask for volunteers from throughout the region to help lay out our infrastructure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Cecily Taylor, senior planner here at SANDAG. Just wanted to give a follow-up to the meeting we had last month. Thank you to everyone who participated and gave us input on the regional plan network. We are planning to bring an item to the board at the end of the month, September 27th. So we've taken your input we've gotten from other outreach efforts previously and ongoing results we're getting through modeling to make some last changes. We hope last changes, but we'll bring it to the board and see if they allow us to move forward with that draft network.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments from committee members? Thank you so much, Cecily. Do we have any comments from the members of the public?
Thank you, Orb. There are no public comments on the non-agenda item.
All right, moving on to consent, item number 1 and 2. Those are approval of the meeting minutes and the 2024 Mobility Working Group meeting calendar update. Can I entertain a motion for approval?
I would also like to remind the members that they do not need to have been present at the meeting to approve the minutes from that meeting. We're approving the content of the meeting based on the clerk of the board.
I'll pass that motion.
Thank you. Motion by Councilmember Sebring.
I'll second.
Thank you. Seconded by Ms. Cotter. Thank you. Do we have any comments from the members of the public?
There are no public comments.
All right. All in favor, simply raise your hand. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Motion carries. Moving on to report number 4, item number 4. We will hear from Associate Data Analyst Connor Boss on the 2023 State of the Commute.
Working group members and chair. My name is Grace Munio. I'm the acting director of the Data Science and Analytics Department. Last time Connor and I were here was in June, and we were presenting to you the transit ridership dashboard. And so now we're returning to you with the results from the 2023 State of the Commute dashboard. And I'm happy to introduce Connor Boss, Associate Data Scientist is here.
Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be back. Today we'll be going over the State of the Commute. This is an annual report that SANDAG puts out, and so basically today I'll be providing a little bit of background on the report itself, about how it was created and some of its developments over the years. I'm going to provide an update on this current 2023 report and how it's new and improved, and then I'll also be providing results from this news report as well as a demonstration, and I'll kind of wrap up with some next steps about where we see this report going in the future based on feedback that we've received from some of the presentations that we provided. So a little bit of background here. This is a ITOP mandated report, and basically what it reads is that on an annual basis, AMAG will review system performance evaluations and produce the state of the community report and provide an independent analysis of information included in the report on things such as service levels by roadway segment and time of day, travel time comparison between major trip origin and destination locations, and then as well use this information in the RTP development process. So there's quite a bit of information that we cover in this report. I'm not going to be going into every single detail today, but it is accessible in our open data portal for everybody to review. So the state of the community, the first annual report was produced in 2005, and then through the collaboration with Caltrans, NTS, NCTD, Sandex staff, as well as some of our working groups and committees, we designed the performance measures and indicators in the state of the community report. And as a result, we've completed 9 reports, 5 info bids, and this is the second version of this dashboard that we've been able to produce. So where do these metrics come from and how were these decided on? Well, as I mentioned before, most of these performance measures were determined by the transit triennial performance audit. And in the 2018 audit, it required the recommendations that we were able to use the state of the community as a vehicle to address. And so you'll see a number of these listed here. Of the 40 recommendations that we had in the 2018 audit, 28 were specific performance measures, and as well in this newest audit, I want to mention that we are reviewing those recommendations and finding out how the state of the community can be flexible enough to incorporate some of those recommendations in future reports. So a little bit of a timeline over the kind of recent recommendations. 2020, we took over this report, and then in 2023, we created the first version of this report in a dashboard format. From 2022 to 2024, we've been working on finding new ways to do new things with data, such as incorporating big data into this analysis for things such as congestion on local streets and roads. And then as well as working on the data community, we also look at other performance measures such as traffic safety and also looking at transit ridership. And so those are 2 different dashboards that one being released at the end of last year and one that we expect to be launched later this year. And in addition to that, we have our performance monitoring module for local jurisdictions for data collection. So basically looking at traffic counts on local roads, and so that's something that we're working with our partner agencies to start evaluating. This is a brief summary of all the different improvements and additions that we've made to the state of the community over the course of a few past years. I'll kind of just highlight recently in the newest version, we've incorporated new source for bridge data. So this is going to be based on some feedback that we received from the last report, was that folks wanted to go a little bit deeper into the data to get a little bit more specific, and so we've addressed that by finding a new bridge data source. And as well as we've added more years of information, that's another feedback that we've gotten, is that we want to be able to take a look at some of these metrics over time in more years than what we were previously reporting. And so that's another huge update that we've made to this in terms of transit travel and highway travel. So next steps we have, like I mentioned, we are working on releasing our transit ridership dashboard, which is very exciting. This will be a new product to our area, but not new in the sense that it, other MPOs and other transit agencies have worked on similar products across the nation. And big shout out to NCTD and MTS for being integral partners in making this happen. We've completed our transition to our new passenger counting program over the past month or two, and so now we have more dynamic tool that allows us to dive deeper into transit data than we have in the past. And then we're also working on gathering more bike data funded through Transit Smart Growth Incentive and Active Transportation Grants. And if you have any questions, feel free to shoot those to either Grace or myself or our data at tandem.org team. And now it's time for our fantastic productions team's favorite activity, which is this live demonstration. So, to be able to access this, just kind of briefly, we have this in your agenda packet, but if you also want to kind of navigate to this on your own, all you have to do is go to Stand.ag website or to our open data portal and navigate to the 2023 State of the Commute. And this is going to have all of the information that we cover offering here. And I know we have some new members here who might not be super familiar with the Open Data Portal, which kind of a brief spiel on this is that the Open Data Portal is our way of being transparent with our data and democratizing access to this. So all the information that you see in here is available to download. You're also able to see more information about how the data was collected and prepared and what are the original sources by selecting the vertical ellipses in each one of these figures. By looking at these figures here, what you can see here are just in this first key finding section, some of the big takeaways here. What we're seeing here with peak period highway travel is that vehicle miles traveled, also known as BMT, it's about the same as it was from 2022 to 2023. You'll hear me talk about years 2022 to 2023 kind of periodically throughout the presentation. I want to mention that this refers to calendar year, not fiscal year, just kind of as a level setting here. We also looked at, as I mentioned before, peak period highway travel time. And so what we're seeing here is that while BMTs kind of remain constant, we're seeing that highway travel during our peak periods is up in terms of how long it takes for you to get from one location to another. And we'll get into a little bit more about this later on. What we're noticing as well is that there's an 11% increase in transit ridership from 2022 to 2023. And so this is still kind of, again, hear me say this over and over again, but this is not yet to pre-pandemic levels, but it is getting back closer to those. We also, in this report, cover traffic collisions. So this is on basically any collision that's reported to law enforcement in our region is going to be covered in this data source that we have. And so this is preliminary data that we have for 2023 and as well in 2022. But what we're noticing is that overall we notice more collisions in our region, although preliminary data is suggesting that some of those fatal and severe injury collisions may have decreased. But we're actually working on updating those numbers right now. We've received final information from the California Highway Patrol, so stay tuned for more information on that. But as I mentioned, there's lots of information in this report that can be kind of grouped together in these sections right here. You see highway travel time, traffic safety, transit, specialized transportation, bike, local roads, and infrastructure conditions. I'm not going to go through all this information today because I can talk to the cows come home and they have more potential to really eager to get to their items. But I will go through some of the high-level information here in the first part of this report. So kind of as a level setting here, we have a couple of indicators here with kind of our region, the people in our region and our economy. You'll see that for the most part, population stayed kind of relatively the same while employment and gross regional product in the region has started to go up since the pandemic. So just basically kind of what this is important, it shows that while the region is not necessarily increasing the number of residents at the same rate, people are starting to get back into the workforce and we're starting to see more overall spending in our region. We can go into the highway travel section here. What this allows you to do is kind of travel from key corridors in our region. So we've got 12 different corridors. We have two directions per corridor, and this figure allows you to filter by a couple of different items. If you zoom in, as we see here, you'll see information about a given corridor. It'll show you the travel time and numbers of minutes that it takes for you to get from one end to the other. It'll also show you the percent change from 2022, the previous year, and it'll also show you the change from a pre-pandemic measure of 2019. And then in instances where there is a comparable transit trip from along that corridor, it'll also show you what that relative transit travel time would be in a number of minutes as well. Regionally, like I mentioned earlier, what we're seeing is that along these corridors, transit travel times are, or sorry, overall travel times along these corridors are up, but still not back up to the levels as we saw in the pre-pandemic area. So next section that we have here is information about volume on our highway system. So this looks at the AM peak periods and PM peak periods, and what we're visualizing here are the 40 most congested locations on our highway systems during our peak periods. And so what you can see here is the size of the bubble shows you how many vehicles are moving through that area. But what we're kind of noticing here is that travel in our region is, like I mentioned, getting back to those pre-pandemic levels. So we're seeing, I highlight a couple of statistics here in 2023, Interstate 5 out of 11 of the 40 most congested peak period locations. And so this allows you to kind of get a better understanding of where traffic is at its worst during its peak periods. Moving on to the next section here, as I mentioned, the preliminary numbers for 2022 and 2023 show a slight increase in the number of total collisions, but I do just kind of want to stress that these are preliminary numbers and they will be changing once we finish processing the finalized 2022 information lastly, what I'll just mention here, I mentioned a little bit before, is that transit travel in our region is up in the terms of boardings, 11% from 2022 to 2023. A major driver of that is the opening of the Blue Line Metro Trolley extension. And so what we're seeing kind of across most of our rapid routes as well, and later in this report, is that most of our metrics that we're measuring is that transit travel is increasing in terms of number of boardings and number of passenger miles as well. And so we are starting to see us get back to kind of pre-pandemic levels, but we're not quite there yet. And so there's a ton of great information here. We start from this point on getting into some more specific and nuanced information, and I definitely encourage you all to take a look at this if you haven't already. But we do plan on making the next update in the springtime of next year for the calendar year of 2024. And so I'm happy to pause here and answer any questions that anybody has. Thank you.
Thank you. Very insightful presentation. Thank you. Would there be comments from members of the public?
Thank you, Chair. There are no public comments on item 4.
All right. Any working group member comments or questions? Yes. Ms. Cordova.
Thanks so much for the presentation. I really appreciate it. I was just kind of curious, like, in terms of the trends that you're seeing for bicyclists. Like, has that gone up? Like, I'm kind of curious. And then the other thing that you noted, too, which I was kind of curious about, was you said transit ridership had increased, but it hadn't gone to pre-pandemic levels. Can you shed a little light on what pre-pandemic level was for transit ridership?
Absolutely. If I could actually get some help from our production team, I don't know if we could answer those pretty swiftly here. So if you scroll back up a little bit here to the next figure, we'll show you just briefly. We had a peak in 2015 in overall boardings in our region, and so from there we saw a decline in transit ridership going to about 2019, and then we saw that pretty stark drop off in 2020. So from 2020 through 2023, we've seen kind of different levels of increase while we were still in the pandemic in 2021. Wasn't that big of an increase, but as things started to get back to this new normal in 2022 and 2023, we're starting to see bigger increases as people start to get out and start to get back to work and starting to travel more. If you scroll down to the bike section a little bit further, we can show you that travel in our region, as far as the number of bikes that we count at our specific locations that we have counters at, it's not back to what we call the bike boom of 2020 when everybody was out and about on their bicycles. But it is still relatively higher than the pre-pandemic level that we saw. And so this isn't comprehensive of travel across our entire region. This is just the locations that we have counts for. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Kendall.
Any other committee member questions or comments? Yes, Mr. Schmidt.
Hi, Nathan Schmidt, City of Carlsbad. Thank you for this. It's a very interesting presentation. It's always interesting to see these updates, and it's for us at the City of Carlsbad, we like to kind of compare with our own data. And everything we're seeing is pretty much consistent with what the Sandag data shows. One suggestion would be to explore ways that you can start to fold in some of your TDM data. I know Sandag, they have a very robust program. You know, we're seeing some interesting anomalies in the data, in the vehicle data, especially in terms of, you know, overall the daily traffic. It's kind of like you said, it's creeping up again to those pre-pandemic levels, but we're noticing some interesting things, like in terms of the peak hours. The peaks appear to be less pronounced, meaning that the volumes are spread more throughout the day, which is likely as a result of, you know, working from home, TDM. So it would be interesting to see how TDM is impacting that commuter traffic throughout the region. And I know Sandag has really good data that they can share on that. Other than that, yeah, again, very consistent. The bike data, it's interesting to see. We're seeing the same thing along our coastal routes, is that there's kind of a gradual drop off from those pandemic days when biking became so popular. And with that, just appreciate these continual updates. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much. We can absolutely look at that.
Thank you. Any additional comments or questions? Yes, Mr. Kenny.
Mike Kenny with the county. Your population projections the last 3 years, are they trending down or are they just flat?
Hi, I'm going to answer this one only because our estimates and forecast team are about to release our updated 2023 numbers. And this one, we were using the vintage. What was it?
I don't remember.
Okay. But we are releasing our annual jurisdiction 2023 estimates, and we might be doing it either this week or the beginning of next week, and we're actually seeing a slight increase now in the San Diego County population. So we haven't finalized it yet, but we are seeing a slight increase now.
Thank you. Additional comments or questions? No? All right. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Mino and Mr. Vaughn, for the presentation. This was an informational item only, so moving on to item number 5, where we have Samaya Elder, Sandbank Associate Regional Planner, providing an update on the Regional Zero Emissions Vehicle Incentive Program.
Okay, so with that, I will move on to what we're taking your input on today, which is implementing the program. So one of our first steps when we were thinking about implementation considerations was to take another step back and look at what we heard from CBOs and community members to see what they've shared and recommended to us throughout the process the past year of developing this program. As a reminder, we shared this information before, but the top barrier that we've heard from communities was limited access to charging, so we're, you know, highly aware that these go hand in hand, and, you know, we're not working on them separately. They are very much a concerted effort. And some of the implementation recommendations that we've heard are having a simple, clear application in multiple languages for accessibility, another really important point for equity. We also want to leverage community networks, so CBOs and personal networks, to share inside program information, and similarly to market the program through social media, which is a little bit more accessible, public-friendly, and community events. So these are all things that we're planning to refer to in the implementation plan, but if you have other recommendations or thoughts, we would love to hear them. So another important consideration, and this kind of is in line with having clear and straightforward communication about the program, is to align with current and upcoming incentive programs. So we've listed two on the screen here, but the program availabilities are, you know, there's constantly new ones popping up, so we're actively monitoring that. But staff has been repeatedly meeting with and consulting with the Air Pollution Control District, or APCD, on their Clean Cars for All program. And similarly, we've been working with SDG&E on their used EV rebate program. We will continue to do that with the goal of identifying how we can streamline any requirements, our marketing and outreach efforts, approval processes, et cetera, to try and get those as stackable and streamlined as possible. And then pivoting to the second bullet, which is another aspect of regional coordination, we know that we need to address those charging gaps. So I mentioned on the previous slide that really every audience we've engaged throughout the development of this program has mentioned that limited access to charging is a really significant barrier to even considering driving an EV. So we're working internally to identify how we might be able to leverage Phase 2 of Sandown's EV charger rebate program, which is already underway, to address these gaps. And the screenshots here are just some examples of known gaps, more in like the urban floor and then in the rural East County area. For reference. So I will end with just a few remaining questions and considerations that we're exploring as part of our implementation planning. So as I mentioned earlier, our preferred program structure is that upfront rebate, which I mentioned is going to require some dealership buy-in and coordination to administer. So we've already started meeting with dealer associations and similar types of groups in the region to understand not only what that would look like, but how we can best work with them to make that a reality and make it happen. And in the same vein, you know, looking internally at our program management and budget management procedures to manage those upfront discounts versus having a post-purchase rebate. They're a little bit more administratively complex, but as I mentioned, this format is highly preferred by community members, especially for an equity-focused program, which is what we want to do. Some of our next steps are that we'll be presenting to the Transportation Committee on September 20th, so next week. As I mentioned, engaging car dealers, transportation network companies, so companies like Uber and Lyft, community organizations and other types of stakeholders for other implementation considerations, identifying funding pathways, and we'll be wrapping all of that information up into an implementation plan this fall. That is everything I have today, so thank you again, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Helder. Do we have any questions from members of the public?
There are no public comments on this time.
Okay. Any committee group member comments or questions? Yes, Mr. Larry.
Larry Retreat, Lino with MTS. I just had a question. I know it's based on funding, and funding hasn't yet been acquired, but how many residents are you hoping to assist with this program overall? And then also, is it a first-come, first-served basis?
Good question. So we are not sure yet about how many residents we'll be able to serve.
Our program strategy or the design does outline kind of the incentive amounts that we think would make sense based on research and modeling about the cost of EED and typical household spending on transportation at all of those different income levels. We have some sense of the amounts that we want to distribute, and then, you know, the amount of funding that we're able to source will kind of define how many residents are able to receive those size incentives, if that makes sense. Can you remind me of your second question? I'm sorry.
How do you decide, or is it a first come, first serve basis for applicants?
It's first come, first serve for those that are eligible for the program, which is different from how we've done our EV charger rebate program, which was first come, first serve for everyone. So it's a little bit more of a refined focus program this time around, but it'll still be open to anyone who qualifies.
Yes, Councilmember Seabury.
Are you aware that it costs more to repair these cars and they're more expensive to insure? So how can low-income people afford that? More higher insurance as well as repair costs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think part of the purpose of the incentive is to bring down that upfront cost so that it evens out more closely to the cost of an ICE vehicle, a gas vehicle. I don't know the details specifically on like insurance benefits or anything that we are planning at the moment, but I'm happy to follow up on that.
Thank you. Additional questions or comments? Yes, Ms. Cordova.
Thanks so much for the presentation. I was just kind of curious, in your implementation plan, is it also including like outreach, like how to market and sort of, I'm kind of curious because it sounds like you've gone through, you know, very thoughtful considerations in terms of just the simplification of the applications, the different languages. I realize where that was going, and so I'm kind of curious in terms of the outreach of the actual program, if that would be included in the implementation plan.
Yeah, that will definitely be covered. And yeah, I appreciate you recognizing. I mean, we spoke to so many wonderful community members and CEOs, and even on the dealership engagement side, we've heard a lot about how to make this as simple and useful as possible for the community members that are interested in transitioning to an EV. So we plan to continue that as part of marketing the program. And technical assistance will be a huge piece of that as well. So not just here's the program, go for it, but you know, how can we really get you where you need to be?
Yes.
Is there anything you're trying to get more people to get? I mean, the goal is to have more people to purchase EV vehicles. So are you working also with, you probably already said this, but people to put solar power on homes as well, since, you know, people want to plug it in at home in their garage or something like that?
That's actually, I really like that idea. We do work with both SDG&E and San Diego Community Power on a couple of their solar programs just to kind of stay involved, but I think we should have another discussion kind of more focused on how they can support maybe the EV rebate program. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Insurance City of Carlsbad. Just a few quick clarifying questions. So on the eligible applicants, is it both of those criteria? Do they have to be within the annual income and live within a disadvantaged community? Is it both of those or is it or?
It's the annual household income is the eligibility criteria, and when we were previously referring to the definition of low income and disadvantaged communities, that was based on federal funding we thought could maybe apply to fund this program. That's no longer the case, so we realized that to make it even more simplified and streamlined, income will cover all of those populations.
Okay, thank you for that. And is there any opportunity for for example, in Carlsbad, we have employers that contact us for helping them with setting up a carpool program where they would like to purchase EV vehicles that, you know, maybe they would be serving disadvantaged communities, taking their workforce and getting them into Carlsbad. Are there any opportunities within that area with this program?
Not that I know at the moment, but I think that's something that we can explore. Yeah, thank you.
Additional questions or comments? I have a quick question. How do we go back to the slide where it says regional coordination? How do we assure residents that live in those specific areas know about the program?
So that would be part of our targeted marketing, education, outreach, and technical systems effort, I think is what we're calling it now in our implementation plan. So it's a pretty comprehensive look at how to reach the audiences that this program is meant to serve. I don't know if we have some clearly defined mechanisms yet. One thing that we're kind of piloting and running through the first time on another project is working directly with CBOs in a contracted agreement to leverage their expertise to reach the communities that they serve. We could explore something like that for the launch of the incentive program or other similar types of outreach.
Great, thank you so much.
Yes. I might be opening up Andrew's box with this question, but currently with new developments, there is a small percentage requirement, I think, to do provide EV parking. And I'm sure this is probably like a state thing, whatever, but trying to work on having that requirement increased to where more of the majority of the parking spaces might be EV parking, but then having those spaces available to gas vehicles as well, but having that flexibility and so that we're not. It's that whole thing, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, and they're trying to sell these cars, but they don't have enough, charging stations, and they have clusters of, parking lots where people are more traveling, but just also what about just when they're at work or at home or something like that. So I'm just wondering if we need to start focusing on having that requirement out there of having more EV parking with new developments.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm well acquainted with the Calgary code for the EV section, so I believe that may be updated in the near future. I have to check again, but it's something that I'll consider and maybe even bring back. Yeah, like how can we be more of an advocate in that space?
Thank you. Any additional comments or questions?
Yes.
I was just wanted to know that, a multi-pronged approach for the, the marketing and the outreach, I think would be beneficial. Having worked at the local municipality and working through CBO, they're great, but they're also very limited sometimes in staffing resources and ability to outreach to everybody in the community. So I think a multi-pronged approach when you're looking at marketing and outreach is a great way to ensure success.
Thank you.
Any additional comments or questions? I would like to thank you for your work. Thanks NDAC staff for continuing to lead on this effort. We understand, taking a step back, that a lot of the incentives, whether they're federal or state incentives for EVs, go overwhelmingly to individuals with more wealth that tend to live in certain neighborhoods. So I really appreciate the program that is intended to make sure that everybody benefits from this, including our folks in rural East County and within our individual city propers. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
So this is a discussion item only. Moving on to item number 6, we will hear an update from Sandag's associate engineer, Andrew Camacho and Shen Ryans, on the Claremont Complete Corridor site.
Stakeholder coordination, existing condition findings,
recommendation, and vital study contents. This map displays the study area, which includes Claremont Drive from Mission Bay Drive to Denver Street, and Marina Boulevard from Gessner Street to Linda Vista Road. The study aims to improve regional connectivity and access to Mission Bay Park and the Midcoast trolley stations at Claremont Drive and Tecolote Road, better connecting the community to the UTC to the north and Old Town, downtown, and further destinations to the south. The purpose of the Claremont Complete Corridor Study is to document study area transportation issues, identify improvements for pedestrians, bicyclists, transit users, and drivers, also identify multimodal improvements by documenting the planning process, range of options considered, and providing conceptual designs and cost estimates, and finally, support future grant applications to secure implementation funding. Here's the project timeline. Kicking off in late 2022, followed by our initial series of outreach to community planning groups in May 2023, and completion of the existing conditions report in July 2023. Solution development was initiated in September 2023, along with a second series of community planning group outreach. In October 2023, we analyzed the performance of project alternatives to inform the selection of recommendations to advance towards conceptual design in January 2024. Cost estimates and supporting implementation confirmation was prepared in March, followed by finalizing the Claremont Complete Corridor Study in June. The effort was supported by the formation of an agency coordination team comprised of representatives from Standag, Caltrans, MTS, and the City of San Diego. These agencies met as a group 7 times over the course of the project, as well as separate individual meetings, providing input on approaches, sharing ideas and data, and reviewing deliverables. Additionally, we presented to community planning groups during the existing conditions phase to learn about perceived transportation issues and community needs, and during the recommendation development phase to share concepts being considered and evaluated. And now I'll let Andrew speak to the existing condition findings.
Thank you. So our existing conditions assessment was informed by data collection and analysis, a literature review of previously prepared studies and planning documents, as well as the input received from community members and stakeholders. Some of the key findings that we found were the need for separated bicycle facilities on both corridors due to the relatively higher posted traffic speeds as well as the traffic volumes. Also the need for enhanced multimodal access to both of the trolley stations at Tecolote Road and Claremont Drive. We noted several gaps in the existing sidewalk network, as well as curb ramp deficiencies that are really barriers to pedestrian mobility throughout the study area. And we also identified some opportunities to improve both multimodal operations and safety along Claremont Drive, particularly at the I-5 southbound ramps. So our approach to recommendations really revolved around 2 key design decisions. For Claremont Drive, that was to first determine the appropriate traffic control or intersection control at the I-5 southbound ramps in Claremont Drive. For Marina Boulevard, West Marina Boulevard, it was to determine the most appropriate bicycle facility. That would really shape the other types of improvements that could be recommended in the area. So for Claremont Drive, our recommendation was to add a roundabout at the intersection of Mission Bay Drive and Claremont Drive, and this would improve operations for all travel modes. This would be complemented by squaring up or making the I-5 southbound on and off ramps more perpendicular with Claremont Drive. And the intent of that is to really facilitate slower vehicle speeds as they transition between freeway and Claremont Drive itself. This gives us the opportunity for additional pedestrian and bicycle crossing enhancements at the intersection with the off-ramp and Mission Bay Drive. And these really complement the one-way cycle track or separated bike lane that's recommended along both sides of Claremont Drive. And for Marina Boulevard, West Marina Boulevard, the bicycle facility that was selected is a two-way cycle cycle track along the west side of Marina Boulevard. And this really takes advantage of the rail corridor and the relatively few intersections and driveways present along that side of the road. So that results in a facility that's largely separated and from vehicles and very few conflicts between vehicles and cyclists. This is further complemented by signalized intersection improvements, including bicycle signal detection, lead bicycle intervals, bicycle phasing, as well as staging areas to help cyclists transition between the facility and the adjacent streets. One additional recommendation was to help improve access to the Tegelode Road station, and this builds off of the planned Knoxville Street extension. So this would include a signalized crossing for pedestrians and bicyclists at the vehicle where the vehicle intersection is as well. Now help access people from to and from the trolley station to destinations and origins north of Tegelode Road station.
The final deliverable for the Claremont Complete Corridor Study documents the study process and incorporates project deliverables with sections dedicated to existing issues, concept development analysis, recommendations, conceptual designs, cost estimates, and implementation considerations. Next steps include obtaining implementation funding, developing a project initiation document, preparing the environmental document, and continuing interagency coordination and public engagement throughout the all future phases. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from the members of the public?
Thank you, Chair. I do have one public member with their hand raised. This is for agenda item 6, the original drawing. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. You know, I'm just wondering, like, how many people you actually have that are wanting to ride their bikes, if it's something that is, you know, cost effective as far as, you know, most people are tending to drive a vehicle. And so I'm just wondering, because we spend a lot of time basically putting in bike lanes and taking away lanes from cars to be able to use, which in that it actually slows down and causes more traffic when people are trying to get somewhere. But there's not a massive number of people who are, you know, at this point, you know, wanting to or actually riding bikes. And I guess, part of that could be if there's not connections, but at the same time, it's a lot of money that is being spent it's almost like you're trying to encourage it. I mean, because the idea too, in your past item, talking about electric vehicles, it's even been said, even if we get people in electric vehicles, we have to stop them from driving in so much and using all the vehicle miles traveled. So this is a way to do that by, you know, kind of forcing people's hand into a different way of transportation. But I'm just wondering, we'll spend millions, if not billions of dollars on bike lanes that people aren't using. So is there, you know, when you're talking to these community planning groups, are there, you know, a lot of people that are telling you that they want to have everybody bike? Or is this just something like if you build it, they will come kind of a thing? Also because it's like a lot of the plan is to make it to de-incentivize driving, and you do that by taking away lanes, taking away parking spots, you know, slowing speeds down, just really making it difficult to get people to go around. So I'm just wondering if you could answer whether or not there is a, you know, large amount of people that are actually going to be using these facilities when they're being made. Are they going to be set empty like a lot of the transit is?
And your time expired, and that concludes the public comments on it.
Thank you. Do we have any committee member comments or questions? Yes, Mr. Galloway.
Thank you, Ted Galloway, Deputy Director of the City Planning Department of the City of San Diego. I just want to certainly thank San Diego staff for this great work. We really appreciate it. And also just to mention that the bike lanes do play an important part in terms of our implementation of our climate action plan in terms of overall reduction in vehicle miles traveled. And the work that San Diego is doing along with local jurisdictions. jurisdictions to implement these bike and multi-use paths are a critical and important effort, especially as it ties into our regional transit investments, and also improving safety on the freeway interchanges with Mission Bay Park. It's a major destination both for residents as well as visitors to our region, and for them to be able to use the trolley and get access and being able to travel across I-5 to the park is an important aspect. So I really want to acknowledge that work that was done, and it was a collaborative multi-team effort with Caltrans, San Diego, and the City of San Diego, so I greatly appreciate that. I do have a question, especially since the speaker had mentioned it, just to confirm that the multi-use bike path, and something that we also identified, as you mentioned, in a specific plan, and this does further help refine that concept into the next phase, enable us to go get capital funds for this. That does not remove the four travel lanes that are existing on Rainier Boulevard, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. The bicycle facility can be a narrowing or a lane that is just reducing the width of the travel lane, and the median is still able to retain all four travel lanes as well as the left turn access.
Great, I appreciate it. Thank you. And just a final question, when would you or anticipate, or just a little bit of in terms of eligibility for next steps for implementation, if you've there's been any consideration of that?
No, we haven't got that far yet. We're working with, this is being led by the planning department, so I'm working with them on next steps on that.
On the mobility, I think it's mobility department for the City of San Diego?
Yes, my apologies, yes.
Thank you. That concludes my questions, thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions or comments? I would like to again thank staff for all your hard work, especially in collaboration with community planning groups. It's critical to engage the active community to move these projects forward. Big shout out to the City of San Diego, community planning groups, Linda Vista, Claremont Mesa, and Mission Bay Park. Thank you. So this was an informational item only. Discussion item. Moving on to item number 7. We will hear from Sandag's Associate Regional Planner, Ruby Morales, and Tim Garrett on the coordinated planning.
Rodriguez, members of the Mobility Working Group. Thank you for having us this morning. My name is Tim Garrett, Associate Regional Planner with Sandag on the Strategic Partnerships Team. I'm joined today by Ruby Morales, Associate Regional Planner on the Integrated Transportation Team, and we're both in the Regional Planning Department here at Sandag. So today we're discussing our approach to developing the coordinated plan, and we're looking for your feedback on goals and objectives, survey topics, and proposed ways to analyze some data to assess the plan development. So let's start with what the plan is. So the coordinated plan provides a 5-year blueprint for how Sandag and its partner agencies will provide transit and social service transportation services in the San Diego region. The plan also focuses on strategies to address the transportation needs of the region's older adults, people with disabilities, and people with limited means. And completing the plan fulfills various requirements, which I'll get into, and ensures that funding is available for providers in that region. So before we go any further, let's start with some definitions. Transit, fixed route is, you know, buses, trains, trolleys, things like that. Specialized transportation, that can be a variety of forms, but generally it's shuttles and vans with eligibility limited to older adult people with disabilities, including wheelchair accessible vehicles, things like that. So the requirements for the plan. It combines federal, state, and local requirements into one single document. So federal transit law requires that we develop a plan that considers the folks in our region with transportation disadvantages, identify the unmet transportation needs. The plan must then identify strategies to better meet those needs and establish priorities for funding. One of the outcomes of the coordinated plan is that Sandag then distributes funding through the Specialized Transportation Grant Program. So this program has two funding sources. One of them is federal, the FTA Section 5310, as well as local funding, the Transnet Senior Mini Grant Program. State requirements come from the Transportation Development Act, or TDA, it's an important funding source for planning and operating for San Diego as well as our operators, MTS and NCTV. And the plan is supposed to incorporate recommendations from the triennial TDA performance audit and make sure that the services that we're operating are productive, meaning that they're serving many passengers per hour of service. Then the local requirements for the plan come from San Diego Board of Policy 18, which provides the transit planning responsibilities among San Diego, MTS, and NCTD. The coordinated plan evaluates existing services, provides the methodology for proposing near-term service adjustments, and satisfies the requirements for the regional short-range transit plan. So there are clearly many requirements that we're taking into consideration, but we have leeway in terms of deciding what the goals and objectives for the plan are going to be. So to, as a starting point, for as we develop the next one, we've listed here the goals and objectives for the 2020 coordinated plan. And this is has an effect for the next several years because applicants and service changes for funding must demonstrate they're meeting the goals of the coordinated plan as we implement them. So here's the ones we had in the last plan, upgrading key corridors in urbanized areas, being fiscally responsible, providing effective transportation services through a variety of different definitions. And we want to know if these are still appropriate. Should we be continuing with all of these, some of these? What are the types of goals that we should be incorporating into our new plan? And so we'll be taking feedback from our public outreach that we'll be learning more about in a moment, as well as the data analysis. But we also have some initial thoughts that we want to hear from folks in the mobility working group, as well as other working groups. One kind of takeaway from the previous plan is that they were pretty broad. So it's really easy to say that any type of service change or applicant to specialized transportation grant program is meeting the goals. So one consideration is maybe we need to define the goals a little bit more narrowly, better defined to the gaps in transportation needs that aren't being met. So the idea that we have narrower goals and the implementation measures will be narrower, that we'll be a bit more focused on providing needs where they're most needed. Maintaining a focus on accountability and efficiency would be likely to be appropriate for certain services, but maybe there's different standards for services that we expect are going to be less efficient, less productive. And those might be services operated in rural areas or suburban areas, as well as services proposed with greater transportation access needs. We also want to add in the consideration of equity, making sure that people in need have access to transportation that suits them, and also so that higher ridership services receive an appropriate level of investment in service quality. And so we'll continue the presentation, but we'd love to hear feedback at the end of the presentation on the goals and objectives that you think would be appropriate. Next, we're gonna go over to Ruby to discuss the outreach plan for the project.
Thank you, Tim. So for outreach, the main component of our outreach will be our survey. So the last coordinated plan had a questionnaire, and that was able to speak to the different themes of transportation needs. But we want this data this time to be a little bit more statistically significant. So we will be working with a consultant to develop a sampling plan that will consist of random and convenient samples. So people will be able to take the survey if they choose to, but we will also be distributing the survey randomly. And so using this random approach, inmates will be able to get responses from all areas of the region. And some of the topics the survey will focus on are the transportation needs of older adults, people with disabilities. We want to know where these trips are originating, the purpose of the trip, the frequency, as well as the eligibility and availability of transportation services by time and location. So are these services limited by geographic location or service hours? And of course, we'll be looking to determine the effectiveness and of the existing transportation services as well. In terms of data sources, these are our proposed sources. So we will be taking a look at the results of the survey. We'll also be looking at using existing standard data, so as estimates and forecast data, employment centers, traffic safety data. We have also requested MTS and NCT data for their transit networks and performance. And we can also pull additional demographic data from the U.S. Census and American Community Survey. So we're also looking for your feedback if you think we should also be looking at different data sources. But our proposed data analysis is to map the current and forecasted demographic data along with the service areas. So mapping this data will help us really paint a picture. So for example, if it's forecasted that we'll have a larger older population in the future, we want to be able to see like where the gaps are in the service area, so we can identify strategies to fill those gaps and needs. So this slide goes over our next steps and the milestones that we expect to complete over the next few months. So we'll be bringing this presentation to other standard working groups over the next few weeks for additional feedback as well. And we'll begin our survey and data collection efforts this fall. We'll also be doing more outreach to writers and service providers. We'll have focus groups, and that will take place between fall and winter. And as we receive data, we'll be identifying the transportation needs, gaps, and strategies as well. And ultimately, we'll have a draft coordinated plan followed by a comment period, and we hope to have our plan adopted in the spring. Some next steps and how to stay connected with us. For more information about the plan, feel free to visit our project page at standac.org/coordinatedplan. You can also follow us on social media. You can reach out to the project team at coordinatedplan@standac.org. Our personal emails are also listed on the slide, so definitely reach out with any comments or questions. And now that concludes our presentation, so we'll turn it back over to you, Chair Rodriguez, to facilitate any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from the members of the public?
Thank you, Chair. I want to go for a comment on item 7, the original draw. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it seems that a lot of stuff that happens is that you're implementing requirements over the needs of the people. And I don't know why you would use old SANDAG data. And that doesn't seem, I mean, of course you can implement it, but I think that we still need to be requiring more data. And, you know, I'm wondering how you're outreaching to the people that would actually be using these services, like specialized transportation and whatnot. I mean, if you're asking people that are already riding, that's one thing, but if you want to encourage more people to do it, you know, what does that outreach look like? Are you just doing some kind of an event? I mean, are you reaching out to people? I mean, not everybody that would be, say, elderly or needing some kind of specialized transportation is necessarily like on the computer or has an email. I mean, more and more people are getting more tech savvy, but you know, I'm just wondering like how much money you're spending to outreach, how many people you're actually reaching, and if you're, you know, really figuring out what the needs of the community are over implementing requirements that, you know, are coming down from the state or even just like, you know, for your climate action plan and things like that. Because if you're implementing things over a plan that isn't really something that the people have been saying that they need or are asking for, you know, are you negating the needs of the people? Because especially there's a lot more people that drive and take public transit or whatnot, or that bike or walk. And those seem to be places that are being neglected except for the fact that you would, you know, try and get people to incentivize them to get an electric vehicle even when there's no infrastructure to really implement that and have people be able to get around. So I think if you want people to use this kind of transportation, then you need to be reaching out to the people that are actually going to be using it and asking them what they want. And that would go into people that aren't using it currently, but what would it look like for them if they were to use it? What would they want to happen and what would make it easier for them? So, you know, what does that outreach look like as far as the people go, not stakeholders?
And your time is expired, and that concludes the public comments.
Thank you so much. Do we have any committee member comments? Yes, Councilmember Seaver.
Thank you. I believe the seniors, like over 75, 80, there's so many of them that have a quiet, silent voice and they're underrepresented. And you would never know that these are the people that actually need the rides to the grocery stores or things like that. I know in Imperial Beach, we have like four or five that they're all on their own, and there's probably more. And I believe what would be good for the various communities that you have that little tiny shuttle that takes these people from the grocery store back to their home. That's all they need to do, but once a week. And they're not the kind.
kind that will be riding a bus. They're not the kind that have the computers and stuff like that. And I know for a fact, if someone doesn't step in to help them, they would have never left their house. And I'm sure that's in all these pockets of every community. And Coronado has that little electric mini thing. It's not a golf cart, but I think that's what every community needs, a little piece of transportation to be aware of these older people. And how are you going to get all these older people on a list, you know, because unless you go door to door, we just so happen to know of these people from the sheriff's department has a program called YANA, You Are Not Alone, and these are older women that have nobody. And when the sheriff comes to visit them once a week, if they didn't go to visit them, they would have never seen anyone that whole week. So we need to find out where these pockets of these older people that have no family left, to help them get this kind of transportation to take them to the grocery store. Because if they don't have that, they're walking and tripping, and or they just go without. So I think this would be a great program to let's search out our older seniors, because there's a need out there, and I've seen it. But thank you, and I love what you guys are doing, and to not only do for the handicapped, because they need it as well, but the older people could help, use your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. Yes, Ms. Coffey.
To kind of play off her comments, I know that with Oceanside, it's very minimal, but we have a senior transportation program. So I'm just kind of wondering, maybe to add on to her comments, is kind of having a portion of this coordination plan include a specific senior transportation plan, where it is very hard to kind of find that outlying, you know, person that doesn't get reached out to and stuff like that. And, but there are areas where there are senior communities where, you know, at least reaching out to those communities specifically, and like senior centers. I mean, I know not everybody has that, but just kind of that's at least a start. And then reaching out to, you know, different maybe groups in the city, such as you said, the CHP office, the sheriff's office, you know, and then they might know pockets of areas and stuff that can be kind of looked at and reviewed at, in various cities.
Thank you. Any additional comments or questions?
Lisa Madsen, Port of San Diego, and previous author of the previous three coordinated plans. So just wanted to say this is great work. I'm really excited to see the outcomes of this next iteration of the plan. So thank you.
Thank you for your contribution. Additional questions or comments? Really want to commend the efforts of SANDAG staff, Ms. Morales and Mr. Garrett, on continuing to do outreach here at our community. And it's really listening to our constituents. So thank you so much. All right, so this is a discussion item only. Just as a reminder, the next mobility working group meeting is scheduled for Thursday, October 10th, 2024 at 9:30 a.m. Any additional comments or questions? Yes.
I apologize. I neglected to make a comment or an announcement prior to one, if I could now.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Just want to announce that the City of San Diego has started work on updating our bicycle master plan. I would encourage members of the committee and the public to go to our website. If you just Google Bicycle Master Plan, City of San Diego. We also have a survey available as part of our existing conditions work, and I would encourage members of the community and public at large, to if they're interested, to please go to the website and take the survey. Thank you. That concludes my comments.
Thank you so much, Mr. Galloway. Any additional announcements? All right. We will be adjourning a little early, 10:56 a.m. Thank you so much.